All right, on this episode of Bouts Talkin' Bouts, happy to be speaking with an individual who is a UFC 2 veteran, also a lifelong martial artist, strong karate base, and just quite the remarkable story that I'm excited to get into. I'm talking to Fred Edish. How's your day going so far there, Fred?
Nice and busy, so that makes me happy. I'd rather be busy than bored.
Yeah, and what are you keeping busy with there? I imagine you're doing some martial arts-minded kind of stuff, or is the busy schedule occupied by something else at present?
No, mostly martial arts when I'm not working. I work full-time plus, actually. In my job, I end up usually working more than 40 hours a week, and then I do quite a bit of teaching during the week, and then Saturday mornings I go up and train with some friends of mine in a weapons class, so... stay nice and busy there. Some days I do a Zoom class with some of my karate students that I've got scattered around the country that don't have a whole lot of guidance when they're on their own. So we figured we'd take advantage of Zoom and see if we could get some people rolling again.
Yeah, and what's the day job there when you're not honing the martial arts skills, if you don't mind my asking?
I'm sorry, I missed your question.
Oh, it's okay. I was just saying, like, what's the day job when you're not kind of honing the martial arts skills, if you don't mind my asking?
Oh, absolutely. No, I work for the Salvation Army. I've worked for them for about 7.5 years or so. I've worked several different capacities for them. I keep saying they keep moving me around trying to find where I can do the least damage. I'm not sure that they found it yet. But I started out with them working as a case manager for their permanent supportive housing program, where we helped folks get and stay housed in the community who had been experiencing homelessness. From there, I went to our residential veterans homeless program, where we actually housed homeless male and female veterans. And I went from there to a community-based veterans housing program called Supportive Services for Veteran Housing, where we literally went out in the street and found homeless veterans, got them off the street, helped them get established in an apartment. We were able to help them financially for a finite amount of time, and then hopefully get them set up so that when we had to back out with our funding, they either had their benefits rolling in or they had employment of some sort. Anyway, some sort of an income where they could maintain their housing and not end up back on the street. Then I worked as a janitor. Then I worked as a technician in the drug and alcohol rehab center. And now I'm the facility manager. So I've been bouncing around like a ping pong ball.
That's awesome, though. Is this something you were still involved with when you were, you know, in your MMA journey and stuff like that? Like, how long does this date back? Because I think that's cool. You've allocated your time to a worthwhile series of causes there.
With the Salvation Army, it's been about 7.5 years. I started with them in 2013. Prior to that, I did some security work. I did a lot of work in the adult mental health field for about 10, 12 years, working with mentally ill and chemically dependent adults, trying to help them, again, stay housed, stay out of the hospital, or take them from the hospital setting when they weren't quite ready to be totally on their own, and have them in a supportive living environment and help them make that final transition to be able to get out on their own. I did some child and adolescent day treatment programming for kids who had mental health problems and behavioral problems. So I tend to gravitate towards the jobs where it's low pay and a lot of stress, but the payback tends to be a little bit more internal because you're actually helping people, and that's good for the soul, but it's bad for the bank account.
It kind of seems apropos in a way, almost, though. Like, you talk about the high stress, low pay dynamic. That seemed to be the dynamic with the UFC 2 performance even there. Like, didn't you get paid like a grand for getting out there and whatnot?
I got $1,000, yeah.
Just a wild experience all around there. But no, I just love the dynamic. And it seems like you were talking about there was a student you had at one point that just showed you UFC and everything like that. But the interviews I was seeing, I don't think you mentioned a specific person by name per se. Who was that individual there that was, you know, exposing you to that? Because they seemed like a bit of an eccentric character that was part of the journey for a little while there.
Yeah, definitely eccentric. He was a student of mine named Randy Lee. from up in northern Minnesota, and yes, he's the one who came in with a copy of Black Belt magazine and showed it to me, and in his enthusiasm was insistent that that would be just exactly the kind of event that I would really do well at, and convinced me to pursue it, and I did, obviously, and I took him with me as a corner man when I went down to UFC 2.
And I imagine that was something you were hugely excited about, because from what I was seeing in the backgrounding there, like the karate tournaments you had when you were kind of like a younger, burgeoning martial artist, it would seem like there was a bit of a level of bias for certain competitors, but also you felt maybe the combat was a little, I guess, regimented, maybe not as realistic as it could have been. So I imagine this UFC framework was wildly exciting to you.
Yes, exactly. That was one of the reasons why it was so exciting to me, was that the rules were so limited. You were able to go out there and do whatever it was that you were able to do, and there was no interference from judges, even the referee, even John McCarthy in UFC 2 didn't have the authority to stop the fight. It was totally in the hands of the fighters and the corners, and there was no this is a point, that's not a point, politics. I know some people say that the event was skewed to favor Royce Gracie, but I didn't see that. I never felt that. I thought it was an even playing field. We all had an opportunity to show what we were about and to practice what we trained, and the chips fell where they may. It, you know, and I know that the Gracies were involved in, you know, and producing this because they did want to show off Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I did not see where there was any favoritism, and that's what I liked. You know, you went out there, you won, you lost. There was no arguing over bad decisions, bad referee calls, biased judging. It was just two people out there giving it all they got. One was going to walk out a winner, one was going to walk out a loser. There was not even a chance for a draw. It was very black and white, and I really thought that that was something that was refreshing, like you say, especially compared to back in the day where you had karate tournaments where there were a lot of rules, and the rules were selectively enforced in a lot of cases, depending on if you were one of the favored ones or not. And for example, I used to fight pretty hard, and that was why some Randy Lee and some other people told me that I should be fighting full contact, and then when the UFC came out, that I should be fighting the UFC, was, people would do a lot of the fancy, aesthetically pleasing, jumping, spinning type of things, and that I tended to defend that kind of thing really well and knock people down or knock them out of the ring area and get in a lot of trouble for that, or hitting people too hard when they came running in uncontrolled at me. And
yeah.
That kind of thing just drove me crazy. I thought, well, this, you know, this is just so totally removed from any kind of a realistic fighting base. And to me, martial arts is about a lot of things, but one of those things is realistic fighting. And, you know, if you were going to teach people a martial art and say, you know, this is a true martial art and you can defend yourself with this, you needed to be realistic about it and not have so many limited rules and favoritism and just goofiness like that, that you know, we're going to get you hurt out in the street, because if you fought that way out in the street, someone was going to eat your lunch. So it was just, to me, UFC took all of that and threw it away and was very raw, unfiltered, and real.
And I thought a cool facet of it, too, was just the fact that you'd not even seen the initial UFC tournament, and you just had this mentality of, I'm going right into this. I'm going to just represent my skills here and everything like that, because I feel like certain modern fans almost take things for granted in that regard, just like the ability to strategize certain things and the awareness of what's going on. But you're entering just this completely unknown sort of foreign space, but just wanting to express your martial art.
Yeah, it was, there's definitely no strategizing. I had about 15 minutes notice of, actually that I was going to fight. So the strategy was out the window. I didn't even know who I was going to fight until I walked in there and looked across the cage, and there stood big, angry-looking Johnny Rhodes. And I said, oh, I guess that's who I'm fighting. And And the rest is history. I did not do well, obviously. And now there was a lot of reasons for that. I hate to go into too many reasons because then it sounds like I'm making excuses, and I don't like to do that. Johnny Rhodes was definitely the better, more prepared fighter, and I thought the event and the surroundings and the short notice get in my head and completely kind of psyched me out, and that was a failing on my part. I can't blame anybody for that because, in my mind, you should always be ready to switch gears. And my transmission got stuck, and I didn't shift gears. The result was obvious.
But you alluded to something, you know, very curious that's part of the story as well, where it's like initially they were almost having you in like the Burt Watson-esque type role, like facilitating fighters getting from place to place, and then Horian Gracie finds you in the stairwell, and it's like, can you fight? Like, just a wild series of events.
Yeah, exactly. It was, I was a fighter jockey. I was finding guys that were scattered all around. Nobody knew where everybody was because of the chaos. The event got switched on us from being a big, nice arena, the McNichols Arena, to a very opposite type of an arena down on Skid Row called Mammoth Event Center. I don't know. They probably have torn that down by now.
Yeah.
But there was no organized changing facilities. Guys just kind of found a space wherever they could find one, and they had rented a hotel across the street, and there were fighters over there, and it was a very interesting hotel, to say the least. It was disgusting. It stank of urine. There was doors that were not on the rooms. There was drug deals going on, and it was mass chaos. And poor Art Davey was getting gray hairs as I looked at him. His gray hairs were sprouting out, and he asked me if I would do that for him, if I would go and find the fighters, whoever he told me to get, bring them up to the staging area, because he wanted the thing to run smoothly for the pay-per-view. And I said, well, of course. And I'm just glad to help. I was there, and I was told I wasn't going to fight. I was told the night before that since all the fighters had arrived and everybody was healthy and ready to go, that my services were not required, and that I would probably be brought back at a later one. And that I got to go to the show. And then Art pressed me into service, and then Horian, like you said, he found me all wide-eyed and grabbed me by the arm and asked me if I was ready to fight. I said I was, but obviously I wasn't.
A bit of a stark contrast in as far as like the hotel dynamic, though, because from what I understand, the actual fighter hotel that you stayed at for the like week-long period was like a Marriott kind of caliber, but then this like hotel that's used for more of a changing room kind of a framework, it's just this like ratty kind of dynamic. So like that must have been a, you know, pretty stark contrast, juxtaposition sort of thing there.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, they took great care of us. UFC did. Semaphore Entertainment, WOW Promotions. They put us up downtown. I think it was the Marriott, and a very nice place. They gave us a stipend to eat on. The hotel was great. They had set up for a gym, so you have some gym time to work out during, you know, the week ahead. And it was, you know, I have no complaints about that. They lived up to everything that I could have expected. And as far as the event was something, the event center was something that they had no control over. They didn't want it there. That's what happened to them. There's nothing that they could do about it.
I guess that's kind of emblematic of
raging beast of mine in the back there. It's, as you can tell, it's a very large Doberman, and she saw the mailman.
Oh, no, I got a dog like that over here, man. It's all good. I understand the situation, you know, trying to protect the house and all.
Oh, yeah, she'd bite me right in the ankle if she could. That's as high as she can reach.
I'm just curious to get your perspectives on this, though, because you have, like, the unique perspective of being within, you know, bare-knuckle MMA and also gloved MMA combat. Like, Jorge Masvidal recently announced plans to get a bare-knuckle MMA promotion off the ground there, and I'm kind of wondering what your thoughts are on that, just the return of bare-knuckle mixed martial arts, because it seems like there's a lot of statistics that would validate that it creates more, I guess, submission oriented exchanges, less brain drama, things of that nature. Like, what are your thoughts on, I guess, bare knuckle MMA kind of coming back into the picture there?
I like it myself. That's, to me, it brings it more full circle. It brings it back to the more realistic two guys fighting, and still has, you know, rule sets and stuff to keep people safe so that it doesn't end up getting in danger of being, you know, being banned. I think the whole, the idea of the least possible equipment, I think, is good for the fighters. You have to train better. You have to train differently. You have to train your hands correctly. And as a traditional Okinawan karate stylist, I do that all the time. So that's something that I like, because my hands are very well conditioned. They, if your hands are not well conditioned and you don't know how to hit bare knuckle, you're gonna shatter your hand. It's punching with a naked hand is quite different than punching with the 4 ounce gloves. You can't get away with, you know, incorrect technique because your hand is a very fragile instrument. If your fist is formed correctly and you hit correctly, you're going to be okay. But if you're off by just a little bit, your hand's not going to hold up. And I also agree that there's probably much less likelihood for concussions, long-lasting brain injuries, because the sustained pounding that happens when you have gloves on, I think, causes the brain to bounce around inside the skull. And I think that's where most of the damage comes from, is the prolonged pounding of the head and the brain bouncing around inside there. I don't think it's the actual surface trauma that's the issue. Without the gloves, there is much more of a likelihood of getting cut. But elbows have been legal for a long time, too, and elbows are going to cut worse than anything else. So I'm excited to see that. I know that bare knuckle boxing is something that's really taken off in certain areas. I think bare knuckle MMA would be a good follow-up, and like I said, kind of go full circle. I'm interested in it. I'd like to see it.
Yeah, I'm intrigued as well, and just thought to get your perspectives because of your unique combat experience there. But I'm kind of curious because, you know, being on that UFC 2 show and everything like that, like, were there any residual, I guess, offers or, I guess, fielding of offers with different promotions, like, you know, back in the day, Pride or IVC or some of these other sort of outlets that were kicking around back then? Like, was there any dynamic like that going on? Because I'd be kind of gobsmacked if there wasn't at least some level of offer being put out there or some fielding.
Nothing, absolutely nothing, and that in hindsight especially is really disappointing. I wanted to do more. Life is complicated for everybody, I know. My life might be a little bit more complicated than some people's. I had a lot of things happen that would probably have gotten in the way had I gotten offers at the wrong time. I had hoped to go back to the UFC because the last conversation I had with Art Davey down in Denver was went before my last minute participation, when he thought I wasn't going to fight. He said, "Well, we'll bring you back for another UFC," and I agreed to that, and I thought that'd be great. So I did write Art a letter after I got home from UFC 2 and said, "Hey, I'd like to take you up on that offer. I'd like to come back," but that never worked out. I never got an offer from them to come back. And I think part of that, you know, was that all of a sudden this thing called the UFC was taking off and they weren't looking for fighters anymore. Fighters were beating down their door. Whereas in the first couple of UFCs, they were beating the bushes to try and get people to participate. So there's really, they didn't need me because they had a lot to choose from. And realistically, I didn't do well at all. Obviously, I did quite poorly. And they probably thought there was really no real need to bring me back because of my poor performance. If I had fought a good fight, if I'd been competitive, if I'd represented myself in, you know, in a more proficient way, maybe they would have brought me back. But I don't know. I've had conversations with Art over the years, and I've, for some reason, never brought that up. I don't really even know why. I guess there's really no point in that because it's water under the bridge. But And it's definitely nothing against Art. Art has been nothing but absolutely wonderful to me throughout the years. Very kind, very, very grateful for what I did down at USC too. And just totally respectful. And I think the world of Art.
Absolutely. Art Davey, definitely an industry legend. But I guess that's why I kind of mentioned Pride specifically, because I feel like, I mean, I understand the UFC dynamic and as far as like you didn't feel the performance was as reflective, but I feel like with a promotion like Pride and just Japanese MMA overall, I find they're very much into like redemption narratives, the warrior spirit, things of that nature. So there was never any offer to like fight like a 500 pound dude in Pride or anything wild like that.
No, there wasn't. I would have jumped all over it for several reasons. First of all, because I would have loved to have fought again and tried to do better. Second of all, I have a strong link to Okinawa, which is now part of Japan, and I'm very interested in the culture. I do speak the language somewhat. I practice speaking Japanese and have for many years, and it would have been fun for me to go over there. I like the way the audiences were. The whole setup really intrigued me, and if I'd have gotten an offer, I'd have been on a plane and been over there with a smile on my face. It never happened though.
But you know, you did get that follow-up MMA bout, and I just love the lead-up to it. I mean, just what an amazingly compelling story. I mean, you alluded to it before, just the personal, you know, issues and stuff like that, and drawbacks that would have felled a lot of different individuals, but you end up getting that first MMA victory, 53 years old. You end up beating the brakes off a guy who's 24 years old. Like, can you even put into words what a moment feels like that? Like, is it just like this enormous cathartic release, relief kind of feeling? Is it even something you can comprehensively feel in the moment of the victory itself? Can you just talk about all that there?
I can try. I know what I felt. I just don't know how to put it into words, but I'll do the best I can. It was definitely cathartic. It was definitely a relief. I'm very grateful to have had that opportunity, especially at 53 years old. I don't look at 53 as being old. Obviously now, because I'm 65 going on 66, that 53 is looking pretty good. But even at the time, I was in great shape. I've always kept myself in great shape. And I still, to this day, I train literally every day. I do something, some days more than others, but there's always some kind of training going on to keep my body in shape and keep my sanity and keep my spirit strong. So being physically ready, I knew I was physically ready, but I've said this before and I'll continue to say it. I really am grateful to the Minnesota Commission for licensing me to fight at that age, because I know they took some heat for it. Because on paper, hey, you got this 53-year-old guy fighting this guy that's less than half his age. What are you thinking? Well, trust me, if I didn't think that I had the capacity to do well, I would never have done it. My whole intention, my whole motivation was to go back and represent myself in a way that inside of myself I wasn't ashamed of. And it really had very little to do with other people, although if I didn't say that, hearing good things from people felt a whole lot better than hearing bad things from people. If I didn't admit that that felt much better, I'd be a liar. I went through an awful long time of ridicule, humiliation on the internet, prank phone calls, emails, snail mail letters of people being very personally insulting and derogatory to me. But that wasn't really what drove me back. It was and it wasn't, I guess. It wasn't to quote unquote show them. It was for me to be able to feel inside of myself that this was a much better representation of myself, of my art, of my teachers, of my training, and something that I could at least hold my head up about. I going into the fight, I was anxious and nervous. I'd be a liar again if I didn't say that I wasn't, because I was 15 and a half years removed from UFC 2, and I was still carrying around with me all of the ghosts and the demons from what happened there. And I wanted to get those demons out. I didn't want to make the worse. And even though if I had lost and didn't represent myself well, it would have been terrible. But it still wouldn't have been as bad as what happened in UFC 2, because I would have at least been psychologically prepared for it, because it already happened once. UFC 2 was the first time that I had done anything like that, and I wasn't prepared for the fallout. And once something happens to you, you can prepare yourself for it better the next time. I wanted to go in there and just really show a well-rounded game. I'd worked extraordinarily hard. I had a couple of wrestlers here locally in Kansas City, and they both, especially one of them, was very good at jiu-jitsu. Henry Chianuma was him. Another guy named Jason White. They really put me through the grinder, and I wanted them to do that, because the wrestling was by far the weakest part of my game, and I knew that I always have believed that if you have a weakness, that's where you want to focus more of your energy than on your strengths, to try and build yourself back up. And so I had them put me in all kinds of terrible, ugly positions and get me just really tired, run me through the gauntlet, and I had a bunch of other people helping me too. And so I really wanted to show that. I wanted to, again, for myself, but also for them, for the guys who put the time in me, for the guys who believed in me. That was important to me. The fight didn't go the way I had it scripted in my mind, and I'm pretty sure most people that fight, most fights that they have, don't go exactly the way that they would like to have them go. But you have to go with things as they unfold and be adaptable and overcome. And fortunately, I was able to do that. I would also be remiss if I didn't mention that a large part of what I did and what I still do MMA wise is heavily influenced by Pat Miletich. Pat's work ethic, Pat's training methods, Pat's mindset, his never say die attitude, his grit, his toughness, well-roundedness, also being humble, just so many qualities that he has that I had always admired, and having gotten to train with him some, rubbed off on me and influenced me greatly, and I know that helped me in that fight too.
Yeah, well, you became a fixture in that whole Miletich fighting system for sure, like just imparting the lessons subsequently on other people. But just such an amazing journey all around. I mean, the aforementioned details for sure are a part of that, but just even in some of the, I guess, aesthetic representations, in the sense of, like, you see the first fight where you're out there and the traditional gi and it's bare knuckle, like we're talking about, and then the next fight is 15 some odd years later where you're in the classic shorts and the 4 ounce gloves and everything like that. So just an amazing sort of thing to see between the bouts there.
Yeah, it was two completely different things, that's for sure. But it was fun to be a part of it from the beginning, and then that much later on. It's I feel honored to have been able to play even just a tiny little piece in the history of MMA. And it was both fights were life shaping things for me, and to me they were challenges that I had to overcome that helped me learn about myself, helped me improve myself as a martial artist, as a fighter, and as a man, both the loss and the victory.
Yeah, and I'm curious. I mean, someone who listens to this interview might think I'm an idiot for even asking this, but because there was such a pronounced period between the last two fights there, I mean, I figure I know the answer, but again, be remiss if I didn't ask it all the same. Is there any level of thought to getting out there at least one more time and competing? Because in that history of MMA piece that I watched, it seemed like you were kind of keeping the door open for maybe one more beyond that. So, like, where are you at in that regard?
If anybody would license me to fight, I'd fight. Especially if there was a number with quite a few zeros behind it. I keep myself in great shape. I train every day. Psychologically, emotionally, I think I'm much, much stronger than either one of my first two fights because, like I said, I keep trying to improve myself every day in every aspect. I'm 65 years old. I'm still working at a full-time plus day job, living from paycheck to paycheck because I was a martial arts bum my whole life, my whole adult life, and I turned down good jobs that would have paid much better and had retirement plans. And I've got nothing on the horizon that would allow me to retire, so I'm going to be working for a long time. But if somebody said, hey, if you'll fight for us, make X amount of money, if it made sense, I would do it. And people think I'm crazy when I say that, but I've been told I was crazy more than once in my life.
But it's just interesting because, like you said, you're still regularly getting in that work and just adding additional nuances with the weapons-based training and just obviously a pronounced focus the last number of years in MMA. And I also understand that you're still, you know, in your mid-60s sparring with some of the younger guys there and everything like that.
Oh, yeah. Up until about a year ago, we had a real every Saturday morning was good hard sparring, MMA sparring with takedowns and the whole nine. That gym that I was working out of there had to fold up shop after COVID hit. So I've been kind of even more of a martial arts bum now. I'm renting time in different people's places. There's a gym downtown Kansas City called Body Fit. They have an extraordinarily good jiu-jitsu program down there. And I'm down there once a week teaching MMA stand-up. And then two more nights a week, I am in a friend of mine. I'm renting space inside of his martial arts dojo. And then Sundays, I do a Zoom class. Saturdays, I do the weapons class. So something that I'm missing now that I was getting a lot more of before is the jiu-jitsu and the grappling. Once a month, I would bring in a very, very good black belt named Travis Conley to teach not only myself, but my students, because I had a few more students than I do right now. And I always felt that I owed it to them to get them the best training that I could get for them. And I've practiced some jiu-jitsu and grappling and wrestling over the years now, but I'm nowhere near good enough to say that I would be a qualified instructor in that regard. So I brought in Travis, who is an excellent wrestler and with excellent jiu-jitsu, and he taught us great skills. And sadly, because of his schedule and his location and me having to change locations, I don't have that luxury anymore. But I'm planning on getting back into that. Still in regular contact with Travis. I used to do privates with him, which were really beneficial. And we're just talking about starting that back up again if we can just figure it out schedule-wise.
Yeah, absolutely. So whereabouts are you at now? Like, are you not in the Kansas City area anymore, or?
Yeah, I'm still in the Kansas City area. I'm in the northern suburbs of Kansas City. Travis has moved quite a ways south, so it's about almost an hour drive each way. He's got a beautiful facility. He's got a place kind of out in the country. He's actually taken a horse barn and completely remodeled it he's a personal trainer, conditioning and fitness and jiu-jitsu, and he's, man, what a nice setup he's got down there. If I had his place, I'd never leave. I'd never go to town. I tell you, it's just beautiful. He's got a great gym, good matted area, but it's just so far away, and then because I'm teaching so much up here, it's just really hard to get down there, and it's hard for him to get up here. So.
Yeah, fair enough. That definitely makes sense there, but it seems like there's a great just community of martial artists out there. Like, I was checking out a prior interview you were doing where you were talking about just knowing James Krause for a meaningful period of time, like since he was like a younger teenager, and just seeing the growth now. So can you kind of talk about being part of like a community of martial artists like that, whereby there's your individual growth, but also seeing that growth in others and everything?
Yeah, Kansas City has got an excellent martial arts community. It's very diverse. There's a lot of martial arts around. There's a real healthy kind of an atmosphere of competition, but support at the same time, if that makes sense.
For sure.
Obviously, there's James Krause with Glory MMA, who's made, you know, unbelievable noise in the MMA community. Many UFC fighters, very successful. Their gym, I don't know the numbers or anything like that, but it's obvious to me that they've grown. I know they've got a satellite school up here not too far from where I live. The original guy that really made noise from Kansas City was Rob Kimmins, and he's still around. He fought in the UFC. He fought at several different promotions and was very successful. Curtis Stout, he fought Anderson Silva over at Cage Rage in London. There's lots of good jiu-jitsu. There's Kansas City Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. There's, like I said, my friend Travis. The gym that I'm teaching at now has got a great jiu-jitsu program with Devin Chaston and David Littlewood. There's traditional martial arts. An old Okinawan guy named Oyata had emigrated to the United States and set up camp here in Independence, Missouri, which is right in our area. And he left tons of really good martial artists down here, some of whom I'm training with. I just trained with this morning. So yeah, it's diverse, it's rich, it's varied. The school that I used to teach out of was a Jeet Kune Do and Wing Chun school, and also they did Filipino weapons. So you've got, man, you got a real nice menu to choose from if you're interested in martial arts in Kansas City.
Yeah, and I was gonna ask you actually about some of the dynamics like that, just in the sense of like still following MMA, still very much being involved in the space in a lot of ways. I was going to ask how you maintain the enthusiasm and everything like that, but I guess it's just because there's so many, I guess, permutations of martial arts expression and just leading that kind of like day-to-day sort of lifestyle and everything like that. Like, I imagine that's what, you know, keeps bringing you back there, just the perpetual pursuit of learning.
Oh yeah, I cannot imagine, nor would I want to imagine, life without training in martial arts. I've been doing it for so long. I started training as a kid back in Norwalk, Connecticut, 1969-ish. I don't remember the exact year. It might have been 69 or 70 that I started training back there. Trained for a couple years. Moved out to Minnesota. Didn't get to train. And he just floundered around on my own a little bit. When I got out of the Marine Corps, I went back home to Minnesota. I started in 1979 training with Okinawan karate, and I've never looked back. I've trained pretty much every day of my life ever since then. And you know, I tell anybody who'll listen that martial arts has saved my life. And not in the way that people might think. Martial arts has given me direction. It's given me passion. It's fed me mentally, emotionally, spiritually, intellectually. It's challenged me. Having martial arts to throw myself into to help get me through all of life's traumas has saved my life, because if I didn't have an outlet, if I didn't have something to throw myself into and lose myself in, I would probably either be dead in jail or addicted to drugs or alcohol. I mean, I had to bury a son. I've had a lot of different other traumas that have fed into making me who I am over the years. And a lot of it is very destructive stuff. And if I did not have something to throw myself into, I think it would have overcome me. And I'm a firm believer that, you can say God or the universe. I know what I believe, but I don't believe in preaching to other people. But I know that we're always given the tools that we need to overcome no matter what kind of horrific thing happens to us. And I'm convinced that that's why martial arts was put in front of my face. It's like, here's this thing, grab a hold of it and run with it, because this is what's going to save you. This is where you can go. This is what you can do. This is where you can hide. And, you know, it's not martial arts for everybody. There's other things, obviously, that you can do. But for me, that was the vehicle. That was the means that I had to overcome some awful things in life, and I'm really grateful for it, and I hope I'm able to give some of that back to other people along the way.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, perfectly put, man. I mean, even in doing my research on your backstory, I was just amazed at the, you know, strength and resolve and just like maintaining the dignified stance as a martial artist all throughout it. I mean, like, once I saw you, you know, end up getting the victory and everything like that and MMA, I was tearing up. I was like, what a journey to follow, and just what an amazing, like I said, sense of just strength and resolve and just like dignity all throughout it. So just, yeah, incredible kind of stuff, man.
Thank you. And the learning too. I think that part of what keeps me young is that constant thirst for more knowledge, more practice. I think it's stimulating in so many different ways. It keeps you from getting stale. I think we get old when we think we can't do more, or we won't do more, we don't want to do more, when we sit down in that easy chair and we don't get up, and we quit moving, quit exercising our brains, our bodies, our spirits. That's what makes us old. And I try and exercise all of those parts of me every day, so that I just told somebody this the other day, the goal is to die young as late as possible. I want to stay young, but I want to stay young until, you know, for many, many years.
Well, that's an incredible expression. I'm going to have to steal that from you for the future, I think. But in regards to just like training and, you know, the motivation and just the whole journey and everything like that, usually when I have fighters on my show, I ask if there's, you know, particular genres of music they're partial to training to, or even fighters, you know, sometimes use music before or after sessions to kind of decompress or get in a certain mindset. Like, do you utilize particular, I guess, artists or songs in your martial arts training?
Not in my martial arts training so much, but I use music a lot during other times in my life every day. I love music. I get lost in music. I have many different genres. The blues is probably my favorite.
Oh yeah,
That's where I spend the most time, in the blues. But also soul, classic rock. I'm some country. I'm not a big fan of today's so-called country music, but the old school country music. Bluegrass music. I love the instrumentation in the bluegrass music. There's, you know, there's a lot of different types of music that I have going. If you were to put my Pandora on shuffle, you're going to hear Albert King, you're going to hear Hank Williams Sr., you're going to hear Jimmy Buffett, you're going to hear Bob Marley, you're going to hear the Temptations, the music I grew up with, the Motown sound. The Temptations, the Four Tops, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, Otis Redding, all those guys, and the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. You'd hear just a wide variety of genres of music if you were to put my Pandora on shuffle.
I was going to say, it sounds like the good tunes come in abundance over at the Edish residence there, from what I'm hearing.
Yeah, well, come on over. We'll turn it on.
Well, I would love that for sure, man, but you've been amazing with your time, and just so appreciative you were able to, you know, make time in your schedule and provide insights on just what I think is an incredible journey, all things considered. But just in being mindful of the rest of your schedule for today, is there anything you'd like to perhaps add as a parting thought as we're kind of wrapping things up here, man?
I think we touched on most of what I consider to be, you know, the most important things. I would just want to say to anybody that and martial arts, here's another quote for you. It's not mine, it's a friend of mine, my martial arts brother, who was side by side and shoulder to shoulder with me for a long time. I said, martial arts is not, it's not for everyone, but it can be for anyone. And if you think about it, it's, you know, it can be for anybody. And if you want something that you can practice for your whole life, that will just feed every part of you and make you just a better person at home, at work, at school, in your marriage, in your interpersonal relationships, that will help you to learn how to overcome difficult situations, especially if you're if you're into, the hard combat areas of it, what that teaches you is that, things are hard sometimes. You get in bad spots that you don't know how you're going to get out of it, but you have to figure out a way. You have to figure out how to, if you're on your feet, you have to figure out how to punch, kick, elbow, knee your way out, or take the person down. If you're on the ground, you have to figure out how to escape or how to submit. And that's just like life. Life throws at us all these different problems, all these different scenarios, all these different traumas, and we have to figure out a way to get around them. Martial arts trains you in how to do that. It's not just in the gym. It's not just in the dojo. It's in life, and it's a beautiful thing. And if you're looking for something that will help you in life, go out and find a good martial arts gym. It doesn't matter what kind it is, as long as the teacher is good and it's something that makes you happy, makes you excited, go out and do it. You can't go wrong. You just can't.
Well, that's an incredible message and just an awesome way to wrap things up here, man. Just really appreciate you again, to reiterate, making the time and everything like that. And yeah, just an amazing conversation, and just hopefully you enjoy the rest of your day, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate getting to talk to you.